Coming up in the November election, voters are going to have an important decision to make, and that is whether to continue the local operating levy that is in place that sort of supports our fire and EMS situation here along the coast, or choose not to do that. We're looking at both sides of it here on Our Town, and with me right now is Matt House and Mike Webb. Matt House is the chief operations chief for EMS and for Western Lane Fire and EMS Authority, and Mike Webb is on the board. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
So let's talk a little bit first about what this levy is. We know this is something that's been in place for, since when, Matt?
Since 2012, that was the next increase to the levy. I think originally it was started in 96, and it incrementally went up to where we're at now, 45 cents per thousand.
And is the continuation of this still going to be at 45 cents per thousand?
That's exactly what the ballot is to renew the current operational levy at this current status.
And for how long?
5 years.
5 years, so it's a five-year period. What is the biggest thing that people need to know about the fire and EMS and about what this money is used for?
I'm going to jump in there real quick, though, too, because we are still Western Lane Ambulance District. So this operation levy is to maintain us as Western Lane Ambulance District. Doesn't include fire.
Right.
Then that muddies the waters anymore when we're trying to do what we're trying to do with Western Lane Fire and EMS Authority, bring everything under one umbrella.
Well, and I think that's kind of that's the important thing about this, is that people need to understand that Sayosa Valley Fire and Rescue is under a different operating scheme, so to speak.
A general obligation. Yeah.
General obligation. And, of course, Western Lane Ambulance is a district that, number one, has a union that backs them up, and number two, collects a lot of their money from two sources. One is the levy, and one is calls, right?
Correct. There's revenue streams from the calls that we generate throughout the year.
And most ambulance districts, whether they're private or public, have things like Life Med that also allow them to bring in money.
Yep, that's correct.
Okay. Why is it important, and what could happen to our local ambulance service if the levy does not pass?
Well, if the levy doesn't pass, we could lose significant funding, which would affect our ability to provide service in the area. And we could lose roughly $1 million a year, which comes out, you're staffing one full ambulance anyway, full-time, 24 hours a day.
Well, and that would obviously mean probably cuts in staffing.
Likely cuts in staffing.
No new equipment.
Cuts in services. Our equipment's in good condition at this point, but new equipment going forward would be delayed, if not unable to provide it. We would have to look for a different business model to make it come together. There's been some suggestions that we could privatize or go out for a for-profit, subcontract to a for-profit. If we did that, I believe that our services would be dramatically cut. The for-profit would only be funded on patient service fees, no tax revenue. So our ability to run on roughly $2.5 million, which would be the patient service fees, would be a real challenge to cover the entirety of the district. They would lose a lot of ability to cover more.
What would happen with staffing at that point? I mean, if we went to a privatization, would that mean like everybody that's currently at Western Lane Ambulance would no longer be there and they'd be replaced with the private service? What would happen?
My biggest guess is yes. The for-profits are in it for profit. So they would bring in whatever employees that they have. Ours may be encouraged to apply, but would they be able to get on? I don't know. Would they even want to? There's a difference in the public and the privates. The privates there's not an incentive to reinvest in the community. The publics are reinvesting in the community. There's incentive to make profit. So if they're trying to make profit on the patient service fees, they're going to likely come in with lower paid employees. And the way that they accomplish that is the employees are a little bit newer. Typically, the privates have pay scales that go up comparable to what Western Lane's is. But a district to the north had turnover percentages last year at 20% of their employees turned over annually. That's pretty significant. They also, response time is a lot less. They talked that the service would be the same level. That's arguable, but I doubt. Looking at the county to the north, They had service response times last year that ranged in 80% or below 80% compliance with what their standard of cover are supposed to be. Means they lay out a response map or model of how quickly should you respond at a certain distance and be able to get on time. They measure the effectiveness of the EMT response that way. Their district was less than 80% last year. Our district last year was 98%. So our staffing level, we keep a little bit of additional staff on just for those moments when we have the balloon events. We have four or five calls simultaneous. Matt can attest to that, where you pull resources from everywhere to get to the people. But we still maintain 98% response time last year. Those are things we think saves lives, frankly. We're able to provide newer equipment. We have the cutting-edge technology. Last week, we just approved another measure to purchase some additional intravenous tools.
AccuVein finders, yeah.
Yeah, and the district spent $22,000 on these. It's not something you're typically going to find a private making a decision to buy brand new stuff like this unless they have to, just because this makes our job easier, but it also is better for the patient. And it's something that we chose to do, and we chose to equip all of our ambulances with it so that we're not stuck shuffling around which ambulance has which tool and which one doesn't. I don't think, and I haven't worked with the private, so I couldn't attest to them, but I don't think that they would be incented in the same way that we are to provide the kind of service that we do for the community.
And I can't speak for them, but I'm guessing you're saying like, well, we could get by without this. We don't really need to have it. It would be nice, but you know, if we don't spend the money.
That's my hunch. If they don't have the money to spend, and if they don't have the additional resources from the taxes to spend for that, everything that we get, tax and patient service fees, goes back into the district. It's invested in employees and equipment and reinvested in the community. Nothing goes out to a for-profit or a corporate board somewhere. It's all for the people of the community. So the whole service that we have here is created and maintained for the people of the community. The people of the community have a board of directors that's voted from the people in the community to represent them. And our meetings are open to the public. All of our books are open to the public so they can come and see how we're spending money. We also have strategic planning every couple, 3-4 years that we ask the public's involvement so that they can help direct whether we're on target or not. Are we doing the things that we're supposed to be doing? This year, leading into our strategic planning, we put out a community survey. We spent a little bit of money on the survey, but we thought it was more important to get the pulse of the community to find out, are we doing the right things? Are we heading in the right direction before we go into our strategic planning so that we're not going in blind? The choices that we make are just for the people of the community. How can we better provide service to make sure that you or me or anybody else that's in a crisis situation has emergency response when needed?
I don't know if you still have something to add. You were going to say something there, but I want, in addition to talking about the levy not passing, and Mike saying that the equipment's in good shape now, I mean, over a 5-year period, how often do things have to be replaced?
A medic unit, an ambulance, about every 3 years we have to replace, and that's about $160,000. Our defibrillators, which are state-of-the-art, they get replaced every 10 years, and we're entering that life cycle that we're looking at. They'll be out of life, and we need to replace them, and we're looking at this fiscal year or next fiscal year to replace our defibrillators, and that will be roughly about $400,000. And there's a lot of capital expense that comes in to what we're doing and providing the service at the high level that we do. And I think Mike nailed a lot of the talking points, is that we're community-based. You know, the question that keeps coming to my head is, why would we want to change for for-profit when we've been doing everything the community wants us to do for the last 30, 40 years? And not only doing it within the means, but striving. Since 2012, with the last request for the renewal of the levy, we've increased our personal services. We've increased the training level of our personal services, the critical care paramedic, which is more advanced than a regular paramedic. We've increased our facilities by remodeling the station. We've increased replacing and upgrading outdated vehicles and equipment in this last 5 years. This is all because of the Operation Levy. This is what continues to allow us to develop and build our system for the community.
I'd like to give just a little background on why we have a levy in the first place. The tax base for the district was established back in the early 1990s at 31.9 cents per thousand. At that point in time, Medicare and Medicaid were reimbursing at full billing amounts or close. Our community was not the retirement community it is today. Our population was much more worker. They had private insurance. And our call volume was under 1,200 calls a year. As call volume increased, and as Medicare and Medicaid changed, Medicare and Medicaid changed back in, I would say, 1998. It began to make a major change with a balanced budget amendment. The balanced budget push that Congress and President Clinton were pushing at that point in time. Right now, Medicare and Medicaid are reimbursing us about 25% of what we bill. When we go out for a levy, it's helping cover the 60-odd percent of our community that are in the Medicare and Medicaid billing cycle. We started at 10 cents. $1,000, thinking that 10 cents was going to be enough to bridge the gap. We increased the 25 cents, I think, in 2006. And then we went out in 2012 and asked for the 25 cent increase, up to 45 cent per thousand. We've been at that 45 cent per thousand since that point in time. A couple of years ago, our financial position looked pretty challenging. We were still seeing a deficit. Last year, that changed. Last year, our call volume got to the point that we're actually reaching economies of scale with the employee staffing that we have, that we think the 45 cent per thousand is adequate to cover the operation. We had a cash surplus in end of fiscal 2020. It appears we're going to have a significant cash surplus at the end of 2021.
And I'm guessing you're not predicting a decrease in call volumes either.
We're not predicting it. No, we were up the first 2 months of the year, roughly 100 calls, maybe more than 100 calls per month. So the call volume is dramatically increasing. The operating levy allowed us to add one additional ambulance per shift. That's the increase to 45 cents allowed us to do that. And that's helped dramatically in our ability to respond. The ASA, or the assigned service area, I think the minimum requirement is that two ambulances are on at one time. We run three because the needs of the community outweigh that. And that's really why we have the levy. The levy is to help us fund that response.
Now, one of the detractors from the folks that are against the levy is talking about debt load, about this amount of money that is owed. Tell me a little bit about your perception as being on a board member of what the finances is regarding that.
You're talking about the PERS unfunded liability, correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah, just making sure that we all know what the debt load is. Yeah.
So right now, the district
of course, this is talking about the retirement.
Yep.
Correct. In a traditional sense, the district has no debts. We've taken out no loans. We've borrowed no money to fund the operation that we currently have. But we have what's called an unfunded liability for retirement. It's tied to PERS. And this is something that government accounting requires that we report on an annual basis. That amount was reported at the end of 2019 at $3.4 million by the state of Oregon. Our audit last year reported at $2.9 million, or $3.4 million at the end of 2019. The audit reported it at $2.9 million at the end of fiscal 2020. There's a difference in accounting with the audit, but what the unfunded liability is if we had all of our retired people retire now and we had to pay them everything that we project they're going to be owed over time, we'd have to come up with that dollar amount. And that amount is a lump sum. But it's different. The state amortizes that, and the PERS right now is amortized over a 20-year period, which actually looks like we're going to get ourselves down to pretty close to no unfunded liability after 20 years without having to borrow any additional money or do anything special. It's just we do have to pay a significant amount of money to PERS annually. It's roughly $300,000 a year from the district. Then the employees also kick in additional monies.
And also the PERS sets the rates that we have to abide by. So if PERS says, well, this year is 6%, that's what we would pay. And they're calculating towards the amortization like he's talking about. Mm-hmm. So really the debt that is being claimed as a debt is there, but it's not just our districts. It's any public district. They're all facing this. But again, it goes back to it's set by the state of Oregon on what we can pay. We can't just go in and pay the $3.4 million and be done with it. It's set by the state.
Yeah, not a traditional loan that we could pay off, and it's always going to be an obligation. I think the city of Florence obligation is around $10 million. I believe Lane County's obligation is $230 million. These are ongoing obligations with, and it's an accounting tool to help the public see what we've obligated for the future for retirement. It's not a bad thing that the public sees this, but it's not what I would call a loan in a traditional sense that we can't go and pay this off and resolve it. Nobody can. And we can't determine exactly how much is going to be owed either, because the state comes back. They have an actuarial committee that comes back and tells us how much is owed, how much we are due. Western Lane back, I would say 2008, 2009, we participated in a pool where all of the similar districts pooled their resources so that we don't have wild fluctuations in the amount of PERS that we have to pay annually. And our share of that pool was the $3.4 million. But if the actuarial comes back and says the expected rate of return on the investment is 7% rather than 7.5% or 8%, the amount swings wildly. It could go to $4 million. It could go down to $1.9 million. We even, 5 or 6 years ago, had it at $500,000.
But again, it's not a traditional debt in the sense of its operating budget that you need for...
No,
to provide services.
And it truly doesn't affect our annual our operations. There's been a push of late to reserve some funds for the PERS, and we have some on our balance sheet that we've established a special fund waiting because the state of Oregon has promised, and at one time they did a match where they matched an additional 25% on the amount of funds if we wanted to kind of prepay. We put the money into a pool, and it would offset some of the increases. But I have a hard time personally investing in that pool of money without the state match. I don't want to reserve funds that the taxpayers are paying today for today's operations to pay for tomorrow's retirement.
Well, and especially with PERS not being in the best of shape or having the best reputation, you know, in the state at this point. I tell you what, let's take a quick break. We'll be back in just a minute with Mike Webb at Western Lane Ambulance District Board Member and Matt House, EMS Ops Chief.